The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by OneClick Upsell, the most popular, largest upsell app in the Shopify marketplace, trusted by over 11,000 users, over 1,900 of those big spending Shopify Plus stores, and they've generated over $200 million in revenue for the merchants that use them. And you may be thinking, oh, hey, Andrew, I've heard of OneClick Upsell. I know these guys, but do you really? Do you know what they've rolled out recently? They've got some cool new stuff. For their pre-purchase and their post-purchase upsells, you can now select from multiple different offers to present your customers. So instead of having them just have to pick from one single thing, you can give them the option to pick from multiple upsells, which helps and has proven to increase the number of people who actually take you up on those upsells. So if you're not using upsells in your store, it's an amazingly easy, fast way to increase your average order value and your revenues. So check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by Fulfill.io. Imagine for a minute that you had a central business brain that looked at every facet of your e-commerce operation, shipping, ordering inventory, accounting, everything to help you make better decisions, not just about growing your top line revenue, but about being profitable. If that sounds compelling, you should check out Fulfill.io. They're the only cloud ERP designed to help you efficiently and most importantly, profitably scale your 8 or 9-figure brand. They do that through better forecasting, smart supply chain planning, identifying operational bottlenecks that you can go in and solve to open up the full potential of your business, and also a really powerful and incredible warehouse management system for reduced misships and mispicks for better customer experience. And they're the highest rated ERP among e-commerce fuel members, not NetSuite, not Skubana, not Odoo, but Fulfill. So if you're interested in growing, but growing profitably, you'll definitely want to check them out. And you can do that at ecommercefuel.com/Fulfill. Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, joined by Isaac French, who is the owner of Live Oak Lake. It's a beautiful, modern resort just outside of Waco, Texas, I believe. And I'll let him explain it in a few minutes in more detail. But the reason why I asked to have him on is not, of course, related to e-commerce per se. There's a little bit of like maybe booking and advertising and marketing, but more so on the real estate side. But I personally, I'm very interested in real estate that's a little bit unorthodox, that you can do different things with. I've done some things in my life with real estate that's allowed us to kind of have a little more location flexibility while still being able to have assets that are productive financially. And so whenever I see things like that are not just your standard, hey, let's buy a house and rent it out for, you know, a year lease, I'm always curious. I'm interested because I think there's a lot of room to add value. And I think that I know that's what Isaac and his wife have done incredibly well. And so I know there's also a lot of entrepreneurs listening to this who have side hustles with real estate, or they're taking the profits from their e-commerce business and putting it into real estate. And also a big part of our mission here at E-Commerce Fuel is to help our founders not just build great businesses, but build incredible lives. And I think building up a portfolio of real estate businesses, a portfolio of real estate properties, especially if you can use some of those in tax advantage ways to do cool things, is really interesting. So anyway, all that to be said, we're going to be talking about all of this stuff today, the finances behind it, how he built this. We're looking forward to this. So Isaac, welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you very much, Andrew. It's a big pleasure to be on.
Yeah. And for those listening on the podcast versus watching the video, Isaac wins the award for most beautiful backdrop. He's like in this gorgeous, lush, you know, there's trees, there's birds, like, you know, there's not one sitting on his shoulder singing, but it sure sounds like it. So pretty bucolic, beautiful background. I'd love to start, like, for people who haven't been stalking you in preparation for this interview and researching, paint them a picture of what Live Oak Lake is. What is it? What could people expect to, what's it like if you show up for a weekend there?
So Live Oak Lake is a modern micro resort here in the heart of Texas. We've got 7 modern Scandinavian cabins nestled around a small lake with these beautiful mature live oak trees surrounding and just a very nature immersive experience. We've got a lot of amenities on site, a container pool, walking trails, hammocks, fire pits, and we've crafted the whole experience to really be a place where you can go and unplug and get away and reconnect with nature, reconnect with your friends and family. And it's really become an oasis and a destination in both Texas and the greater U.S. at large. We're getting a ton of people just coming here to stay. We don't have TVs in the cabins. We're very much geared towards engaging people with the outdoors around them. We've got floor-to-ceiling glass skylights, and they're just situated in this beautiful location. And we have about 75% of all of our bookings are direct, and that's due to a pretty substantial audience we've built up in the year that we've been open, of around 120,000 on social and another 40,000-ish email. So, like I said, it's a destination. This is not just a place people are staying when they come through Waco. They're coming to Waco to stay with us here. So we've been incredibly blessed with the success we've seen just in the year or so since we've been open.
And why this model? I mean, you could invest in commercial real estate. You can invest in, you know, a portfolio of residential rental properties. You could do Airbnb. Like, why this is a model that almost no one is doing? Why did you pick it? And what other models did you look at and say, not interested in that? Let's do this instead.
Well, the number one thing I said I'm not interested in is just your average, you know, buy a 3-bedroom, 2-bath home in suburban America and try to paint a mural on the wall and put a couple yard games outside. I think that with Airbnb bust, that is sort of disillusioning a lot of people with Airbnb. You know, Airbnb sort of became this incredible hype and lucrative investment, that there was this reaction away from hotels into the Airbnb space. And then both a combination of oversaturation in most markets, as well as poor, you know, inconsistent guest experiences and fees that didn't seem justifiable when compared to the traditional hotel, you're seeing kind of a counter reaction back to hotels. I wanted to be able to create a property that highlighted what we do have in terms of beauty and deliver in an incredibly unique minimalist way, which is, there's just nothing like that around here. So when we found the property, the idea was coming together, but when we actually found the property that we chose, though it looked nothing like it does today, all the pieces sort of fell in place in my mind of like how we could arrange the cabins around the pond and what that experience was going to be in the end product. So there was a lot of vision that went into it, but it was a very intuitive, visceral kind of experience of envisioning what that could look like before we actually had any other examples. Because you're right, I mean, there are a couple other small retreats like ours in the country, and there, I think, maybe were one or two at the time that I didn't know of. But it's definitely a new venture, a new asset class. I feel like it's, I would go so far as to say, I feel like it's the future of travel and hospitality, of these nature immersive, extremely experience oriented spaces that are beautiful, that are sort of somewhere between a luxury hotel and resort and a cabin, you know, getaway, very intimate spaces, very personalized too. So our story, my wife Helen and I, we designed and built the whole place. Our story is very much woven into it. We're very much part of the hosting experience, though it has become very efficient, and we can talk about some of the ways we've automated it. We've left our mark on it and told our story through social media, and a lot of people come for that as well. They like our personalities, which is cool, because we didn't necessarily have any of that in mind. It's just become this holistic experience that people have. So I'm really excited. I feel like no matter where the future leads, I would like to be able to replicate this concept and this recipe, so to speak, in other places throughout the world, because I think there's a big opportunity there.
Yeah. And I want to do something kind of interesting. Well, not kind of interesting. For a finance geek, this is super awesome. You have actually shared, you're very transparent, very open about this, and you actually posted one of your P&Ls to Twitter, which just makes my heart sing here. So we're going to go through it. I'm going to give a high-level overview so people can get a sense of operationally income, kind of how the P&L breaks down, then maybe we can get into some of the nitty-gritty. But this is since April of, last April of 2022, so was it May? So this is probably about a year, trailing 12, hot off the presses. So yeah, so this is a kind of looking backwards for a year. So total income on, it looks like, you know, interesting. So the vast majority is coming from, it looks like Airbnb, so about 940K in bookings. Direct is about 600K of that. Airbnb is about 300K of that ballpark. So we're looking a little over 900. And then on your expense side, biggest one, advertising and marketing is only 11K. Cleaning is 121K. We've got a handful of other supplies. There's some management, 75K, maybe some staff, some office supplies. So your total office supplies and total office supplies and software, oh, that's a subcategory, is about 12,000. taxes and licenses, about 15, repairs and maintenance, about 17K. You've got some utilities in there, let's say just totaling about ballpark, about 30 to 40K. And so your total expenses are about 400, netting about 540. So on, you know, this doesn't have any, I don't see any interest expense or anything on here, but that's just a kind of an interest-free expense. But anyway, so without any kind of interest or financing, you're clearing about, your margins are north of 50%. So 540K on about 940 in revenue. So how do you, which is super interesting, talk a little bit about how you finance the property. Do you pay cash for it? Do you have a financing that's in a separate P&L? How do you finance the business?
Yeah, so we bought the property for like $140,000 cash, and that was just some savings. And I brought in my dad and a couple brothers who we're very close-knit family, and they had access to a line of credit for that business, as well as, you know, just a little bit more liquidity and stability. I was 24 at the time, so the bank was not just immediately going to sign a check. So I brought them in as guarantors and minority partners, and we were able to get a construction loan after we bought the land and using that as collateral. And it all comes down to the appraisal. I wasn't spending a ton of time like crafting the perfect presentation. So the appraisal, which is based on that, only came in at like $1.8 million initially. And that's not even close to what it cost us to, well, it cost us about $2.3 to build. So then the bank will loan 80% of that appraised value. So the bank ended up loaning us like 1.5, 1.6-ish. And then that line of credit that we had through the business was incredibly valuable because we needed every bit of it to get across the finish line. We also went a bit over my initial budget, which I kind of knew was going to happen, and I just wasn't willing to compromise on certain details to create the property. The cool thing about all that, so $2.3 million all in, we built it 9.5 months, and then just 4 months after we opened, so we didn't have a T12 at the time, I got it reappraised by the same appraiser, and it came in at like $3.3 million. And so then we were able to refinance, pull all of our line of credit, all of our cash, everything out, pay off the construction loan plus about $400,000. So that was a pretty sweet deal considering that was only, you know, 4 months after we'd opened and, you know, 13-ish months since we had actually bought the property. So the big takeaway for me through all that was, though I'm not complaining, it was my family and I'm glad they did well to give away some equity to them. If I had to do it again, and I'm going to look for hard money lending where I can get, or a bridge loan, mezzanine, whatever, where I can get, I don't care if I pay 20% in the short term, get the project stabilized immediately, build up that audience, and just start to show those robust direct bookings, which now being in the position of actually owning the property and having that audience built, it should be a lot easier to jumpstart future stuff. So the value creation was a pretty surprising, even certainly to me, how much we created. And let me just say, the 3.1 is quite conservative when considering the actual value of the business with the brand and everything that we built. I mean, just looking at the T12 P&L, our NOI EBITDA is around 540. And let me just make one note on that too. So that's our T12. If you actually look at our future bookings, because we raised rates significantly and consistently through last year as our audience was built, as the demand grew, at the current rates and occupancy and ADR, we're looking at grossing about 1.3 and netting about 700 this year.
So if you think about like what you built on that, so let's say that 2.3 all into building, does that include the cost of the land?
Yes.
Okay. So 2.3. So, I mean, you're looking at, let's say 2.3. Wow. I mean, that's, so if your run rate on that is about 700K net operating income and your costs for that, like to actually build are 2.3, I mean, you're looking at like a, you know, just shy of a 33%, or like 30% ballpark plus or minus cap rate. So cap rate is kind of like how much it costs you to buy an asset versus what it's going to rent for, which is unheard of, because if you're looking at most cap rates residential right now, 5-7%, like in that ballpark range. And, you know, a lot of times people look at they're looking at their cap rate, what they're making. And also, it's also an appreciation over time play, but so that's just on the operating side, which is just totally unheard of. And then, you also have the appreciation on and the value of what you built above your cost, which is very cool. So phenomenal investment. A big part of the two is how you've marketed this, right? Like you can slap it on Airbnb, and still, the margins would be fantastic. But one of the reasons you'll be able to get so many bookings on Airbnb is what you've built, what you focus on. Talk about how you've marketed it online and what you focus on. I think the two things are, one, how are you marketing it? And then who is somebody as a gift for the branding, for just putting, for presenting it in a beautiful aesthetic way that makes me say, hey, I want to host like an ECF, like mini retreat here with a bunch of people because it looks beautiful. So talk about how you've branded it and promoted it online well, because that's a massive part of why it's done so well and why it's so valuable.
Yeah. So I mentioned I've taken a lot of interest in design, and though I had no official marketing experience, this whole project, part of the philosophy behind it is like, I love trying new things. I love wearing different hats. And so the whole thing has been a giant lesson in, you know, so many different aspects of this, but not the least of which is marketing. So I designed the logo. I built out the brand, so to speak. And that was very early on as far as part of the identity that I felt like, obviously, Live Oak Lake, it's all about these trees and it's about this water. So it's very individual to this property, this actual piece of ground. I actually didn't market the project at all for the same reason about my not spending too much time on the presentation. I was just in too big of a hurry. I didn't market it at all until we were open. So I didn't build it in public. And though I probably would have been more advantaged to actually have built up a following before we, you know, opened the doors and started booking nights out, I just didn't have time for that. We didn't have renderings done. It was very much, you know, build by the seat of our pants. So I launched on Airbnb initially because Airbnb does give you a pretty good bump for the first month in the search results. And I wanted to take full advantage of that. Now, about 3 weeks into the process, we were starting to get bookings. I, you know, invited everybody I knew out to stay there. Everybody booked reservations. I wasn't giving anything away. But then all of a sudden, our account got suspended on Airbnb. And I hate to say it, but their customer service is just terrible. And I spent days and days on the phone. Nobody could get me an answer. Nobody had a reason. There had been no warning. We were just suspended, the entire business. And it was a pretty bad feeling, frankly, to be like, okay, we just spent $2.5 million. And so what? We're completely beholden to this multi-billion dollar platform that doesn't even seem to know what the problem is. And everything is stopped. Business is temporarily stopped. So that really got my wheels turning about going more of the direct route, which I knew was going to be important from the get-go all along. I just wanted to, you know, get our feet underneath us on Airbnb. And Airbnb to this day still serves a valid purpose. It's very helpful for booking orphan nights, individual nights between longer stays, last minute bookings, because they obviously have a huge platform, a huge audience. But I found really kind of the vein of the best influencers, both smaller, you know, 5 to 10,000 follower accounts, and then up to the multi 100,000 follower accounts, and ended up spending probably 15,000 or so, and gave away probably a 40 nights, which I was able to do because we were just launching. And so we didn't have that full blown occupancy initially. And I had 7 cabins. So giving away nights was more affordable for me. But I mean, it paid off handsomely. We were able to build the following, like I said, to about 120,000 on all channels, just under 100,000 on Instagram, which is our primary funnel for bookings. And on the P&L that you went over, I think we have like roughly 66%-ish of all the bookings are direct, but that's just because we were starting out with, you know, a lot more Airbnb. If you're looking into the future, we're at like 85 to 90% are direct. So I just want to quickly highlight the biggest reasons to go direct. First of all, you can't be deplatformed. And that actually happened twice last year. It wasn't just the first time. It then happened again 6 months later for 12 days. No reason. It was just like their algorithm had flagged my account because of suspicious reviews, which nobody ever told me what the suspicious reviews were. And so we can't be deplatformed. There is no data wall with the guest. So you actually have their email and you can retarget those customers. And we're building these long-term relationships when people come here. You know, I've had people come back 3 or 4 times since we opened and been able to even personally connect with some of them. It's become a tradition, and they bring other families out. And there's just this incredible loyalty that we've built there. And then lastly, profit-wise, I mean, that roughly 15% of additional fees that we're cutting out that would be going to the OTA, like Airbnb or VRBO, go straight to our bottom line, right? Because that's just a flow through. I mean, that's going straight to our profit. So huge advantages to going direct, and that audience, like I was mentioning, that we have that enables the direct bookings becomes very valuable just from the enterprise perspective of the business. It's no longer just real estate like a lot of these Airbnb businesses are that are beholden to this giant platform, but we actually own the audience. So that's a big advantage.
Two things on kind of dovetailing into that a little bit on the branding side, because you're going direct, which is great for the cost. We've also built something amazing. So there's two sides I see to that. Like one, there's the actual property you've built, which and the experience, which we'll get into in a little bit in a minute here. But even just the perception of it, like I mentioned, it looks gorgeous. How much have you spent on high-end photography, drone footage, really great, beautiful, gorgeous video walkthroughs? Your promotional video for it is exceptionally well done. Did you do that, or did you bring an agency in to do that? How did you, because the property, it's beautiful, but even, you know, it takes a lot of work even to make a beautiful property look beautiful digitally. So how did you do that?
So the promo video is a friend of mine. So on both the photography and videography, I've had multiple folks come out and shoot it from their different perspectives and different styles. And that's actually a really great technique. So, and you know, in different seasons as well. So from the very, very first days when we launched and I needed listing photos, I had multiple photographers trying it out. Now, because it's such a cool space, another advantage we have is a lot of these are more amateur, but good photographers, and they were actually coming to me wanting to come out and shoot it. And especially now that we've built that audience, I'm getting a lot of people that just want to come here and shoot it for, and sometimes we'll cross promote, and obviously I'll credit them. And so I've actually saved a ton of money in marketing costs and just buying the actual assets because we have such a valuable asset that they can shoot. And the giveaways I was mentioning, some of those smaller influencers that we've worked with don't have a huge following. So the giveaways aren't going to be as effective, but they're really eager and hungry and talented and can produce some really great content. So then we've repurposed some of that in exchange for allowing them to stay or, you know, doing a giveaway, which leverages our audience. So there's a lot of synergies there, especially as you grow. One technique that I think is valuable, especially from the photography side, is I mentioned having multiple photographers shoot the property. And then we kind of choose one that we really like their color grading, their style, and we have them take the best of those photos and color grade them the same. So they look cohesive, but we have these different styles and different seasons that we've shot the property in. So there's a few things we've learned along the way. And the marketing now, as far as the social media goes, I've actually hired an agency. So I did the first 50,000 followers or so, I was doing everything myself, posting every other day. And at that point, that was last year, early last year, photos were still popping off on Instagram. As everybody knows, that was rapidly shifting to videos and reels. And so I was doing some of the reels myself. I just was too busy to really do it well. So I brought in an agency that I've been watching for a long time that just specializes in like two or three properties like ours. And they come out two or three times a year, bulk shoot for like 3 days. So they see different seasons and then go home. They live in a different state and chop it up, edit it, stay on top of the algorithm, make changes, and then post consistently. So we have the best chance of actually going viral. But another thing I learned just on the social media side is once you hit a certain point of followers, for us, it was around 60,000 on Instagram. It's almost like critical mass. And not you don't just rely on going viral anymore, though we still do that occasionally, but you can't ever predict when that's going to be. But there's just this critical mass of enough people that are seeing your stuff and then, you know, tagging their friends and whatnot, and the platform itself just pushing some of your stuff that is just showing up in the feed of other users. And so we're growing sustainably. We're no longer having to spend money on these giveaways. So that's a really important strategy to launch with. And you always have to obviously post great content, add value to your subscribers, your followers. But it's pretty cool to actually see it sort of just snowball itself.
I have heard from people who have been there, actually I have not, but I've heard through the grapevine that one of the pinnacle foundational elements of your success is pastries. And I want you to talk a little bit more about that.
When I posted that P&L on Twitter, I got so many comments about it. I kind of did it.
What was the line on an expense for pastry? Should we pull this back up? I think we should.
Yeah, pull it up. I think it was like, it was mid four figures.
The only person I've ever met that has a pastry line on their P&L.
It was like $5,000 or $6,000 for pastries for the whole year.
Pastries. Oh, there we go. $5,400 for pastries. That's awesome. So tell us about this.
That didn't even start until about July. So this year is going to be a lot more. So there's a local bakery, going back to that whole personalization touch that we add that's part of the experience on the property. So one of the things we do is we leave like a short handwritten note to every guest in an envelope with their name handwritten on it. And just little tiny touches like that make such a big difference in terms of that, building that loyalty and creating that experience. And then, so we leave the note alongside a little package of fresh, like couple hour old homemade cookies that are baked a couple minutes down the road from locally ground flour too. It's pretty cool. So the cleaners, wow, part of the efficiency aspect of all this, you might think, oh, that's so inefficient. You know, how much extra time does all that take? So the cleaners have access to the PMS. We can talk about that later if you want. It's kind of our hub of the automations and the property management. And so they see every reservation each day. And then the bakery also has access. So every day they know how many reservations we have, how many people are on each reservation. And then they package it. They bake the cookies each morning, package them up. The cleaners on their way to the property stop by, pick them up, and deliver them. So we never even have to get involved, and people love it. And it gives the bakery business too. So it's obviously a big boon for them as well. So it's a win-win for everyone. And you got to find those kind of, you know, first impression, personalized touches that are going to really set you apart. And really that's what it is with Live Oak Lake. I mean, it's just the accumulation of so many details that are working together cohesively that create this atmosphere, this vibe, this experience that really impacts people, and we hear about it. And so we don't have like some secret sauce to our success, except that everything we do has been carefully thought out and crafted together in these details. And people care.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even for people listening, if you're still listening and you're thinking like, hey, like this is real estate, I'm not going to go out and build my whole resort. Like what you're talking about is just building an amazing brand, right? Like incredible touch points across the entire process, from when you see it online to when you show up to when you come into your room and you see like amazing pastries and homemade cookies, to the note, to just like interacting with you and just the whole setting. It's, I mean, you can take that, you're doing it in real life, but you can take that whole thing and bring that online digitally into how you market your touch points, everything there. So it's, I mean, what you're really good at, you're really a great brand builder that's disguised as a real estate developer, a creative real estate developer, right? Is what you're doing. So, which is really cool.
Well, I appreciate that because let me make one comment on that too. So another thing is like, I've been super transparent. I said I wasn't building in public just because I didn't have time. But since we launched, I mean, even on Twitter, I mean, I share my P&L. I've been incredibly transparent, even on the back end and like opening the hood for people. And people really appreciate that. There's always going to be this margin of pushback. That's just that there's going to be haters and that are envious and whatever. But my goal is to be an open book, transparent about the success, about the struggles. And I want to help other people. But let me read you this one tweet. This is my favorite response to the P&L tweet that was centered around the pastries. Somebody said, I love a place that spends more on pastries than propane. So I thought that could be a great little tagline on our website. Maybe. We did. We spent more on pastries than propane last year.
Hey, Andrew here with a little aside. If you're listening, you're obviously interested in e-commerce. And so I want to make sure you know about our private community for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brands at E-Commerce Fuel. And the secret sauce, like you might guess, is it's limited to people who own stores, who are in the trenches, practitioners doing this stuff. It's a very curated community, which has three big benefits. First, it means everyone inside can help get fast, on-point answers to your most important questions. If you're trying to decide if SMS is a tool worth rolling out, if you just got suspended on Amazon, if you're trying to hire a director of e-commerce, these are all things that either people have experience with or have gone through in the forums. And if you post and ask questions, you'll get answers within hours, sometimes even minutes, as well as being able to tap into close to a decade of archived discussions. So you get a lot of insights, fast answers to pressing questions. You get to plug into an amazing network of over 1,100 experienced e-commerce entrepreneurs. So you can reach out to people. If you're in e-commerce Fuel, our members are incredibly giving and generous. And so if you want to reach out to someone with expertise, oftentimes we'd be happy to share what they know. If you're, you know, traveling, hopefully when traveling is a common thing again, a lot of our members would hit in the city, you know, DC, Dallas, Sydney, Australia, you know, London, wherever it is, and be able to have someone on the ground you can connect with or maybe grab a beer with. It's an amazing network. And then finally, we've got a huge user-generated review library with over 10,000 reviews on agencies, software, e-commerce software that you can tap into to avoid costly hiring and software mistakes. Nothing is worse than spending 3 months with an agency to onboard only to find out that a bunch of people already tried them and they were horrible and they wasted a bunch of your money and your life. So those are the kind of things you can avoid tapping into the unbiased reviews and experiences of our members with our software directory. So if any of this sounds interesting to you, you should join us at ecommercefuel.com. You can learn more. You can apply for membership there. We also have a 5x ROI guarantee. If you own a 7 or 8 figure brand and your membership fees for our community don't pay for themselves at least 5 times over the course of the first year, we'll refund it completely as well as send you $1,000 just for the wasted time. So ecommercefuel.com, check it out. We'd love to have you apply and potentially join the community. All right, back to the discussion.
I love it. I love it. How do you run, give us a quick little sense of how you run the business operationally. How much are you and your wife involved in running this? Like, are you if you left for 2 weeks, could you run it? Are you kind of chained to the property? Is it kind of a hybrid of the two? What's your level of involvement and how much staff do you have running this day to day?
So now I have about 1 hour a week of involvement, and it's probably even less than that if I want. I really enjoy marketing, so I still do a lot of that, but we have like completely automated the property. So between our software stack, which is the property management software, does all the messaging automations, aggregates the calendar so you can be on multi-platform, task management, a whole bunch of other things. And then our pricing software plugs into that, does all the revenue management, dynamic pricing, optimizes for occupancy and overall revenue. And then we have a smart home software. So we got a lot of smart home technology in the cabins, door locks, thermostats, smoke detectors, security, noise monitors. And so for instance, it knows when a guest reservation is and spits out a unique door code that's only active for the guest stay that populates in the formula, in the automated message that goes out. By the way, the automated messages, like we've spent a ton of time crafting them to be highly personalized, not too much, not too little, and just reduces the amount of, you know, manual question answering we have to do. And then, so anyway, but then that property, the automation, part of what the automation does is it knows when the reservations are and it will say adjust the temperature on the thermostats during your off time. So you save energy cost. So it's just incredibly efficient. But then I have two people.
Can I interrupt you just for a second? So how does that, what ties it? So I know like you got a Nest thermostat, right? And it will, you can adjust, of course, the temperature. Is it the reservation system? Is there a plugin that connects with Nest that allows you to do that? Or did you have to custom code or hire someone to custom code something that does that? Because that does not seem like something out of the box, or maybe it is.
So that's part of, I didn't do a good job explaining, but the one software that we use that plugs into the PMS is called Operto. And that basically talks to all the individual smart home Z-Wave compatible pieces of hardware. So including the thermostat, the door lock, and all of that. So we didn't have to custom code it, but we did have to plug a few different pieces together to make that work in a very hands-free way. So then I have two part-time employees that run everything. So I spent like the first 6 months, I was working 50 hours a week, incredibly hands-on, like even starting with the cleaning, like my wife and I, we were actually doing everything ourselves to really understand it. Once again, applying that philosophy of doing everything yourself and learning and then delegating. And so we created all these checklists without being too burdensome, but, you know, preventative maintenance things, all of the, you know, periodical stuff there. There's a lot to keep up with. There's a pool, there's hot tubs, there's lawn care, all kinds of maintenance systems to stay on top of the smart home technology, for instance. And then we hired these two people. So one of them is a local landscaper, just a one-man shop, and he's perfect. I pay him $50,000 a year. He's on the property 10 to 20 hours a week. Every single day he's there. He's boots on the ground. He does everything himself. He can be there in 5 minutes if there's a, you know, an issue with the guest trying to check in or whatever. That really frees me up. And then the guest communications manager, or let's just call him experience manager, she monitors all of the messages that are automated and, you know, obviously steps in whenever there are special requests, which happen. But she's very flexible and the job is very flexible. So it only takes her about 5 hours a week. And she coordinates the cleaners. But everybody has access to that software, that one source of truth in the PMS. Makes it incredibly efficient. So that leaves me with a couple marketing things, like staying on top of overall strategy with the social, which I just basically touched base with the agency we have hired, a couple of the emails, which most of that has been automated as well. Yeah, I mean, I've pretty much bought all of my time back, which is pretty awesome, being that we're only a year old.
That's unbelievable. I think on some, just in technology in general, what a great time to run a business online, but also what a great time with all the smart home technology to run like a rental, or especially what you're doing, kind of a series of cabins in the woods. It's like Thoreau meets Steve Jobs. It's so cool.
that's a great one.
How do you make, you're an artist, you love art, and I guess this answers it. You just automate a lot of your property. What kind of art do you do? And like, are you able to, you seem like a very driven entrepreneur. No one, to be able to do what you've done in 12, 18 months would take someone who's very driven. But it also sounds like art is really important to you and carving out time for that. Do you find it difficult, even now that you've automated a lot of this, to be able to step back and take time for something that doesn't have financial utility? And I say that as someone who, like, because I find this is a struggle in my life. Like, there's a lot of things I would love to do, but it's a challenge for me, like music, you know, getting outside, teaching my kids, a lot of these things. But there's always something you can do in your business, right? There's always a way you can streamline it or improve it or market it more. So are you pretty good as an artist about carving that time out, even when you know there's stuff on the business you could be optimizing?
Well, the short answer is no, I'm never going to be good enough at that, because I am extremely driven, but I have been incredibly intentional, especially recently, in making time. And just to step back, we actually just had, my wife and I just had our first child 12 weeks ago. So being a dad has kind of turned my entire world upside down in a really great way. And I feel like, kind of in preparing for that, and since having him, Lucas is our little boy, it's helped me to get a bigger perspective about what's important. I think there's seasons in your life where you push really hard, like 2021 when we were building. I mean, I was working 80, 90 hours a week, and I don't really regret it, because it wouldn't have enabled me to be here today if it wasn't for that. But those are seasons, and you've got to know what your limitations are and be able to execute when you need to. I mean, even during that time, I had a lot of adversity. I actually fell during the project and broke my pelvis on the project, which was a big deal. I was off my feet for the last 3 months of the project. I'd been going, 80 hours a week, and then just fell from a ladder 8 feet, wasn't even that big of a deal, broke my pelvis, which is a big deal, had multiple surgeries, was in the hospital. So I went from going 80 miles an hour to laying on my back in a hospital. And that also helped me at the time. I really wouldn't take it back for what it did to me. But to step back and just understand what's important, including, obviously, first and foremost, your family, your friends, but then the other things like art that you don't make time for otherwise. Or music. I'm also a musician as well. So, but since we opened, and I said we were very involved, I was very involved the first 6 months of operating the project. Once again, that was another season. It was a different objective. It was actually optimizing the operations and the marketing. We weren't building any longer, but that was really the last big piece to set me up to be able to step back. And so now I'm able to enjoy that flexibility. I think at the core, I'm probably more an entrepreneur than anything else, which I guess is probably one of the reasons I say I'm an entrepreneur, is because I like bringing together both the creative aspect, whether it's art or music or just, cool designs and fantasies about building cool things, with the analytical side of actually being an accountant and wanting to be able to make money to ultimately give me the freedom that I want. So being able to wear all those hats just brings me a lot of joy, and I don't get stuck doing one thing. I know everyone says you need to specialize, you need to be good at one thing, but I kind of have taken a different approach, and I think it's paying off. I think you do need to be proficient at something. And like, for instance, in my life, it was, it's been multiple things at different times, but construction was probably the main thing. I spent 6 years from the time I was 17 in high school, working summers from the ground up as a general laborer, to when I was like 23 as a project manager over large multi-million dollar projects. Like, put in the time to learn that trade. And then even before that, I was learning accounting and bookkeeping and taxes on the side as well. So I had kind of two different proficiencies, but neither of those things is what I really wanted to do. I just wanted to have more cards I could play and bring together in a project like Live Oak Lake, which really does. It's a multidisciplinary undertaking. So it requires all those different aspects and skills, and I'm learning tons of new ones through it, i.e. marketing or any of these other things we've been talking about.
Sure, the construction too didn't hurt with the work ethic. And I think people have probably heard this before. I'm sure many of people listening or watching have, but so many of the times, like what really enables success isn't that you're amazing at construction or that you're amazing at branding, but that you are one of the rare people that understands finance, construction, and branding, and you can bring those together. Like for me, I'm not world-class at community. I'm not world-class at e-commerce, but I think by being able to blend those two together, it gives me an advantage that other people don't have. So if you can blend two or three skills, that's where you really start to see some of those strategic advantages, I think. And unfortunately, we're starting to get a little low on time, but I want to ask you kind of some big news for you on the property, which I'll let you kind of break. What's coming down the pipe for this beautiful resort that you've built over the last year or two?
So when I first opened and then about 4 months after, actually, I got on Twitter and started sharing everything about what we had done. I was blown away at the level of interest from other people and mostly from other investors that obviously loved the concept and, you know, loved that I was able to execute on it and wanted to replicate that. So it was incredibly flattering, but I mean, millions of dollars sort of verbally shoved down my throat. And I'd never been in that position before. And it was a little overwhelming, honestly. And I mean, I'm talking about hundreds of emails, hundreds of calls, hundreds of texts, hundreds of DMs.
And are you saying of people who wanted to, when you say money shoved down your throat, like offers to buy the property is what you're saying?
No, I'm actually talking more about, there were some of those as well, but actually like raising a fund or venture capital or high net worth individuals that wanted to invest in future stuff and actually building a portfolio of properties like that. So I said no to all of that in the short term because I was kind of laser focused still at that time on actually optimizing the property itself and wanted to grow sustainably. And also being newly married and having a small family, I realized too, like if it had been 2 years earlier, I may have actually had the impetus to go out, you know, 80 hours a week and build a startup like Wander or one of these cool companies. But that wasn't so important to me. I was in a great financial position. I wasn't like super wealthy, but I was supporting myself very flexibly and was very proud of like a brand that I had built, a property. And so I said no to all of that, but have continued to post about the process on Twitter and have gotten a lot of attention from other influencers in the space and, you know, very people that have really helped me out in a lot of different ways. And so one of the things that I learned during that time of posting was, like I said, I mean, there's just an excess, it seems like, of capital to be deployed. There's always going to be a shortage of executors, people with great ideas that can execute. There's a lot of great ideas out there too. So I didn't have to worry so much about the money. It was more about like, what is the right opportunity? So we actually got approached by several different private equity firms as well to buy a majority stake in Live Oak Lake. That didn't really appeal to me either because I didn't need to sell a majority of Live Oak Lake for any reason really. And I didn't want to lose that much control because it was going to be like 80, 90% and leave me with 10 or 20. And so we said no to all of that. But then in my mind, even as something like Live Oak Lake that I've literally put blood, sweat, and tears into building, everything should have a price tag, right? I mean, I'm 26 now, but I was 24 when I built it very early on in my career and have learned a ton through that, like I said, I want to be able to leverage into future properties, future projects, but everything should have a price tag. So we actually listed the property at like a really high amount that we were like, look, if somebody wants to pay this, I'll part with it and I'll go do it again. Got a ton of interest and got a really great offer finally that I really couldn't say no to. So after a lot of thinking about it and, you know, discussing with the other partners, we took that offer. So I actually just signed the contract about a week ago and we're in the due diligence process right now. Everything's looking like they're going to close at the time of this recording. We still haven't closed. So it's a little bit of a question mark. And like in my mind, nothing is done until it's signed and over with, obviously. So like, I'm not getting my hopes up. I'm not counting my chicks or anything, but if everything comes through, it's just a good fit. It's a new kind of a small REIT actually that wants to buy it. And I've actually negotiated some clauses into it so that I still have access to that audience. The audience was the biggest thing I didn't want to part with. Like, cause how do you put a price tag on that too, right? It's not just about the cap rate. I know how hard that was to build. And though I theoretically can do it over again, it's a lot easier to maintain momentum than try to restart that. But personally, I've also built up a small following as well. So, and you know, my name's out there. So starting other projects, I'll have a big advantage in that regard. But I put in a clause there where I'm going to have access to that for one big reason, which I'll also break some other news, which I haven't made public yet, which is that I am actually launching a course. So I've had a ton of interest from my followers since starting to share the whole process of, you know, because I'm kind of one of the only ones, one of the first that have actually done something like this, and probably the only one that's sharing as freely as I am about that. How did you do the whole thing? Like from the financing, from the vision and finding the property to the financing, to the construction, to the marketing, all the things we've talked about today. And so I've actually done a lot of one-on-one coaching over the past year and have had to raise my price over and over again just to keep up with the demand. And I enjoy that, but I don't like selling my time. So the goal all along was to create more of a scalable resource for people, like a course. So I'm really putting a ton of time into that right now. We're going to shoot the whole thing. It's like 45 different videos, 10 hours of content. We're going to shoot the whole thing at Live Oak Lake. Very, very practical, very visual and cinematic as well as far as the production. I'm really excited about it. But right now I'm actually like working through coming up, like brain dumping all of everything that I know and trying to boil it down to obviously like the most important stuff. And yeah, it's kind of an interesting juncture right now. We're a couple weeks away from closing potentially on selling the property, and we're a few weeks away from shooting this course. And I don't know what the future holds, but I feel very good about both of these things. It's going to put me in a good position with, you know, being that most of my net worth is tied up in that property. It's going to be nice to actually have some cash in the bank. And also just make a note too, though I think we're positioned to succeed regardless of a recession at Live Oak Lake because of the draw of, like, you know, a more affordable, elevated vacation that's, you know, staycation that's 2 hours away from 15, 17 million people in the Texas Triangle. Like, I think we're positioned very well there. But obviously a severe recession is going to impact everyone. And it's just an unknown as far as what that's going to look like. So especially when it comes to the opportunities that are going to inevitably be there in other properties that are distressed and in raw land, you know, that it's going to be going for cheaper than it has been. It's going to be nice to have some cash on the sidelines that I can go out and look strategically for the next project, whatever that is. And I may end up raising money. I haven't ruled that out either. Taking the time that I have to really think about it and be very deliberate in the moves up until this point is, I think, very, I'm glad I did. I'm glad I said no to this point because I still have all those connections should that be the course that I take.
Yeah. I mean, the platform you've built up is insanely valuable. So super wise, shrewd move on putting those clauses and seeking access to it. Live Oak Lake is the handle on Twitter, and I'm guessing Instagram as well. Correct me if I'm wrong, Isaac. LiveOakLake.com is the website to check it out. And you can follow Isaac at IsaacFrench_. Whoever has the non-underscore version, come on. You haven't been posting in years. Give it up, man.
I'll give you money.
Yeah, reach out to him. But beautiful property. We're also doing a video of this too. So you can also go to ecommerceseal.com/podcast and check out the whole video as well. Isaac, I'd love to cap it off with a lightning round if you're up for putting a bow on the episode that way.
Got it. Let's do it.
Great. All right. So just super fast punchy answers. How would you describe the real estate market in 1 to 3 words right now?
Testy. One word. In testy. Texas.
That's a good word. That is a great.
Yeah. In Texas, we're less testy, but everywhere else, everywhere else, testy.
What's one of the fondest memories from your childhood?
Going to really high-end custom homes that my grandfather built, including President Bush's ranch house and a lot of other really high-end homes here in Texas with him, and sort of learning his process. He was a perfectionist. He was an incredible person. Being able to ride along from, you know, the time I was 3 years old on some of these projects and just shadowing him was amazing.
That's cool. Obviously, you live in Texas, I think outside of the Waco area. If you weren't living where you are now, where would you live?
Probably Idaho, which is where most of my family lives. And I spent 10 years there in my childhood. Love Idaho.
Interesting. Where in Idaho? I was born in Idaho Falls and grew up there.
Up near Moscow. So kind of north central Idaho. Beautiful, beautiful mm-hmm. area. I also love Boise a lot too. It's a kind of a pretty nice sweet spot. It's obviously become pretty popular too.
Got it. Yeah. It's a beautiful part of the country and the state. What's your favorite cabin or tiny house on your property and why?
Shadow Bend. It's right underneath these 300-year-old live oak trees and kind of on a little peninsula right by the lake. And you wake up from your restful night of sleep upstairs, and you look up and there's a skylight right above your head, and you just see these amazing trees coming down, these branches that come down. It's just like pure Zen moment.
Hardest part of your business?
Taking my hands off of everything, because I'm a micromanager a little bit and like such a perfectionist that it really has been hard, like delegating everything, but I think I've done pretty good.
That is tough. How much money in the bank is enough? So you can answer this either in terms of actual, just like a liquid net worth, cash and securities or stocks in the bank, or you can say, if you want, you can say a guaranteed income for life, one of those two. And if you still have the chance to make more money, but if you knew you never were going to make any more money, and like maybe you're going to work for a nonprofit for a dollar a year or something like that, how much would enough be in terms of either liquid assets or guaranteed income for life?
To me, like so much about even that comes with making money is so, it's so fun, like actually being an entrepreneur. So that's a hard question to answer. If it was the right, probably like 10 million. That's probably about the right number.
Nice. How many hours a week do you work right now?
For Live Oak Lake, about 1 hour per week and about 50 other hours on passion projects and art and other things I love.
What's the best resort property apart from yours that you think of? And maybe along the lines of yours, maybe not, obviously you've got a pretty unique property, but not like the Hilton and such, which I guess is not your jam anyway. But let's say if you were going to go, if somebody said, hey, I'm going to put you up for a week at any property that's cool and interesting and unique and creative in the world, where would you want to go?
Amangiri. Did you see my tweet a couple weeks ago?
Mm-mm.
Amangiri.
Is this one in the desert of Utah or whatever it is?
Yes, it's absolutely amazing. So we just went there and it's ridiculously expensive. It's like $6,000 for one night. But I'm telling you, there's nothing as cool as that place that I've ever seen. I mean, it's just the most incredible desert setting, middle of nowhere, amazing architecture and design, incredible things to do. So that was amazing.
Wow. So worth it. No regrets dropping the $6,000 per night on it?
Not for one night. I learned way more than $6,000 worth of knowledge as like a hospitality entrepreneur, having built my own micro resort. I learned way more from the experience and how they did everything.
Interesting. And I mean, that's a write-off right there. I mean, you were doing market research.
Absolutely. You bet.
And finally, last question. What's your number one hobby? And you can't say work or hospitality.
At the moment, I just planted a 200-tree fruit orchard. So I'm quite the student there. I've got a lot to learn, but I really, really love designed and planted this orchard. It's got a kind of a small garden in the middle of it with a water feature and grapes and peaches and apples and plums. It's got like 16 different fruits. So besides art and music, which I've already mentioned multiple times, I'm really excited about this orchard.
That's super cool. I love it. Well, Isaac, thank you. This has been really fun for me to learn, geek out about your process, the business side, the branding, how you've brought it all together so beautifully. And man, just congrats to you, your wife, and just the whole team for pulling it together. Again, liveoaklake.com. If you're in Texas, absolutely check it out for a beautiful stay. If not, it's still worth coming in for. It's amazing. At Live Oak Lake on Twitter and Instagram. And you can follow Isaac at IsaacFrench_. So Isaac, had so much fun. Thank you for doing this and congrats on the property and the pending sale. And most importantly, your new little one to the family. So this was a lot of fun and hope I get to meet you in person sometime.
Thank you very much, Andrew. It's been a pleasure and I appreciate the time you've taken.
Given you've made it to the end of the episode, there's a pretty good chance you're fairly serious about this e-commerce stuff, which is why you should check out the E-Commerce Fuel community. It's a vetted, vibrant community for 7- and 8-figure brand owners. And joining gives you access to a lively discussion forum for experienced founders sharing insights and getting help. Access to our library of over 20,000 member reviews on everything from agencies to tech to lawyers to all the things that founders are making hiring decisions or purchasing decisions on to run their business, and invites to member events throughout the year. So if that sounds interesting, you can apply for membership and learn more at ecommercefuel.com. Big thanks to One-Click Upsell from Zipify Apps. Rapidly increase your AOV by offering targeted high-converting upsells. You can get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. And also to Fulfill.io, an ERP designed specifically to streamline complex e-commerce businesses and the highest rated ERP among our community members. Learn more at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network live from New York.